Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. I am so sorry I've gotten on a minute or so late. I hope you're all with me, and I hope that I am on the air. And if Nicholas is there, I'm sure he'll come on and let me know that. Today is Wednesday. It is the 9th of March in the year 2005. Terry Schiavo's death sentence has been set for the Friday the 18th. That would be this next Friday, not this one, of course, but next Friday, folks. And I want to remind you, there have been some, well, first of all, let me stop here. And I guess if I'm not on the air, somebody will call me up, won't they? Probably, so I'm assuming that I am. Calling in late like that, the intro song is all done with. We are on the air, folks. Let us do our spiritual message, and this once again is from the book The Journey with the Master by Eva Bell Werber. And this one is titled The Awakening. My beloved, as you become still, still with all the meaning of the word stillness, I light a candle behind your eyes. I fill your entire being with the radiance that has a glow unto a glorious sunrise. No man can contact me, the living power behind all things, and carry about with him heaviness, a dullness of face or body. When I am recognized in the fullness of my beauty, all things beautiful will flow into that life which so recognizes me. Today, as we speak quietly together, as you come into the consciousness of my presence, in order that I may direct your footsteps, I want you to think on this. There are many souls, but only one spirit. One. We are all one, folks. I know that's a concept that I can say it, I can intellectualize it, but being in that oneness is another whole thing, isn't it? There are many souls, but only one spirit. Yes, how true it is, for in every human form dwells a living soul. Man does not recognize this. To most of those who walk the ways of life, the outer is all that matters. The soul is never lost, but it is buried so deep in material thought that it cannot function consciously in the vessel given it for that purpose, and that purpose alone. So the physical body carries on, haltingly and feebly in earth consciousness. It develops pain and illness. It withers with age, It worries and suffers, when all the while deep within, neglected and unknown, abides that which knows no illness, neither cold nor hunger, that which is ageless, the soul. This must quietly await the awakening. For man was at this point given free choice, either to dwell in the Father's house or to dwell in outer consciousness. Man may never permit this soul to step forward in its rightful place in this present incarnation, but will struggle on, unaware as to who he is, until life at last, through the struggle, points him to his own true soul self. When he is at last awakened, he will know the truth, that he is a soul, and likewise, so are all whom he meets, and through each there flows the one spirit. When he knows this, when he, soul, contacts the living spirit and makes that one-ment, he will be lighted as with a living flame. Life will take on the beauty and glory of the living presence of God, and man as soul will go forth as conqueror at that one high moment of his recognition of union with the Father. He has become the true son of that Father. All his outward manifestation will carry that glory with it. And so, my beloved, again, let us step forward. Today, no matter how lowly the task, know that you are a soul, and you and spirit move and act as one. And I promise you a consciousness of my love abiding with you every moment of the day. I don't know where I got this book. It may have been at the School of Metaphysics when I was a student at the School of Metaphysics in St. Louis. The Journey with the Master by Eva Bell Werber. And you might be able to find it if you're interested in having a copy. For me, it's very beautiful and it's very comforting. And it is a wonderful reminder, a constant reminder of who we really are, folks, of what we really are. And so with that, I wanted to remind you about Terry Schiavo. I've just gotten dozens and dozens and dozens of emails. It is difficult to keep up. The one thing that has come up, now the state legislature in Florida is playing around. They've got a bill that is supposed to have been introduced today, which would prohibit the removal of the feeding tubes of nourishment and sustenance. Well, guess what? They don't even need that damn bill. It's nothing but a game they're playing, because the law already exists. And I read this to you. This is the excerpts that I read to you from Governor Jeb Bush's own amicus curiae brief from October of not last year, but the year before. And it says here, this is what Jeb Bush, he quoted from the Florida statute 744.3215, an incapacitated person retains certain enumerated rights. That section clearly and separately delineates which rights are retained by the ward, which rights may be removed by the court section, which rights may be delegated to the guardian, and which rights the guardian may not exercise without first obtaining specific authority from the court. And he's quoting, as he's saying this, every section of the state law that already exists, folks. Okay? And he said, Let me remind you what Jeb Bush said in this up front. Well, his legal team wrote it for him, but it was in his name. That the governor has a sworn duty to defend the Constitution of the state of Florida. The governor has a constitutional duty to take care that the laws be executed faithfully. That's right from the Florida Constitution. The governor submits this memorandum to ensure that the court considered the critical distinction between removing artificial life support and the deliberate killing of a human being by starvation and dehydration. These are two different actions. The first, removing artificial life supports. The first is performed according to state law and is allowed under Florida's constitutional right to privacy. The second, removing artificial life support, the deliberate killing of a human being by starvation and dehydration. The second is prohibited by the right to life enshrined in the Florida and federal constitutions. So the law prohibits what they're intending to do. And here's some of the other statements. The right to receive necessary service and rehabilitation is a retained right. While many rights may be delegated to a guardian, the right to receive necessary services and rehabilitation may not. Similarly, the right to receive necessary services and rehabilitation may not be removed by the court. The clear language, ordering, and context of the statute indicates that Terry retains the right for the duration of the guardianship. There is no provision for waiving, removing, or delegating retained rights in the statute. Services to rehabilitate Terry's swallowing musculature are necessary. Without them, she will surely die. That was in parentheses, and I don't know if somebody else put it in. It wasn't mine. And they fall within that right, that retained right. The guardianship court recently prohibited the provision of such therapy requested by Terry's parents. Such prohibition is impermissible in the context of Section 765.401, Action to Terminate Life Prolonging Procedures, and is an impermissible deprivation of Terry's rights under Florida's guardianship law and her right to life under the Florida and federal constitution. Now, folks, it's all there. The judge was delegating, actually legislating from the bench. The judge, in one of his orders, Judge George Greer, is it? He redefined. The state legislature had already defined what a permanent vegetative state is, and that would be somebody who is totally unconscious, has no sense at all of their surroundings, and I can't quote this. I'm trying to paraphrase it here, but that the person is not in a vegetative state if they have the ability to respond or react to their surroundings at certain times. And Judge Greer changed the definition and made it that a permanent vegetative state would mean somebody who doesn't respond and every single time. And when they ask Terry, please, Terry, open your eyes, or Terry, move your arm, or look at the balloon, or whatever, they said that most of the time she responds, sometimes she doesn't. And so he changed the definition that sometimes that she doesn't respond puts her in a permanent vegetative state. And I want to remind you, too, that a feeding tube is not artificial life support. Food and water is not artificial life support. Artificial life support would be having her on a respirator, having her all hooked up to machines that keep the heart beating, et cetera, et cetera. Terry's heart beats. She breathes on her own. She sleeps. She wakes. She smiles. She giggles. She responds, ladies and gentlemen, and they're talking about putting this woman to death next Friday. And I would think that it would be good for all of us to put ourselves in Terry's place and ask, what would I ask? What would I pray and hope that people will do for me? And what I would hope is that people would come forward and do everything they could to stop the murder, the killing. I'm going to give you, there's all kinds of things they're asking for us to do. I believe that calling, getting a hold of, emailing or faxing, or and calling, do make a call because it makes the phone ring. And emails are so silent, they're so quiet. They can pile up in somebody's computer and they never get looked at. I'm sure that they're looking at some of them, or maybe they're just counting how many are coming in. But when there's a phone call, you're having a conversation with a real-life human being. I'm going to give you Governor Jeb Bush's phone number. And if you are so moved to do this, to call the office and tell them that we are very clear by his amicus brief that was presented on her behalf in October of 2003, that he is very clear that he not only has the authority, he has the duty to protect her and defend her and do whatever he needs to do to get her out of the clutches of the murderers. The law has already been passed. He could call out the National Guard if he wanted to, folks. And that's what he just, they need to know that we know it. I don't even know if it'll do any good. But you know what? How would we feel if we don't at least try? His phone number, if you didn't write it down, in Florida is 850-488-5394. Wait, that's the press secretary. Just a minute. Okay, that's the press secretary if you wrote that down. 850-488-5394. Here's the office phone. It's 850-488-7146. And there are two fax machines here. If you have a fax machine and you would like to write, handwrite, or type after you make your call, send them a fax. 854-487-0801. There's two fax machines, as a matter of fact. The first one, once again, 850-487-0801. And the other one is the same area code, 850, and the number is 922-4292. I don't know how you feel about that. But, oh, by would you like Judge Greer's phone number? I don't know if this is still the number. This was, I pulled this down off our website at sweetliberty.org. There is a section there on Terry. As you go in, it's on the top right-hand side of the page, the main page, and you can click and go in and find all kinds of information if you need to be caught up on what's going on, caught up to speed. Judge Greer, Judge George Greer, the phone number I have here is 727-464-3933. 727-464-3933. Now, here's what I have heard. Michael has already been given permission to cremate Terry's body immediately after her death. And then whatever he wants to do with the ashes, it's his. He's the husband, you see. He is the guardian. He's the husband that for 10 years has been living with another woman, has fathered two children by the woman, and he just wants to do what's right for Terry. But anyway, they were asking, they keep filing petitions and ask if they could please have a funeral and a burial, and that was denied, and will you please let her die at home? That was denied. They said that he needed to think a little bit longer about whether he should let them try to give her oral sustenance. However, now what I read, I don't know if this was a statement made by the judge or what, but that if she should aspirate, breathe in the liquid or food that they're giving her, and she starts to choke, they're to let her choke to death. Does this sound like, oh, well, maybe you're going to wake up from this nightmare, from that this can't really be happening? That's what it feels like to me. That's what this whole world feels like to me. It's like, it isn't happening. It can't be happening. And we'll wake up. All right, so that's all we're going to do tonight on that. Oh, I know. Here. I told you last week when we did this that the children, the Department of Children and Family Services has already filed requesting a 60-day stay of her execution so that they can investigate charges of possible abuse and neglect. Possible. She has never had any therapy whatsoever. He never lets her leave her room. She hasn't been out in the fresh air ever since she's been in that hospice for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now. A hospice is a place where people go when they have been told by their doctor, well, you have less than 6 months to live. And Terry's been a prisoner there. And Michael Schiavo, from what I have read, Michael Schiavo even decides what kind of music they're going to let her listen to. The parents bring in her favorite tunes, favorite songs, or whatever, and everything is forbidden. Any type of rehabilitation whatsoever, any type of therapy. One of the nurses at one time put a folded-up washcloth in her hand, and he prohibited even that to keep the hand from freezing, going into spasms, and the fingers curling in and all of that. This woman has been literally tortured, folks. So I haven't heard any word yet about whether the courts are going to grant the stay. Nothing has come up, at least as of this evening before I came on air. But anyway, if you would like to call the Tallahassee Office of Children and Family Services, and the name that we had here was Bill Spann, but you could talk to anybody if you can't talk to him. The more people that let them know that we know how she has been abused, how she has been neglected, etc., and thank them for stepping forward, little... almost a day late and a dime short. That reminds me of Phyllis Schlafly. When there's something real important going on, she always gets into it when the whole thing is about over. But anyway, that number is 850-487-1111, Children Family Services. And just ask them how they're doing. I mean, call up and just let them know that we know they're doing it. Remember the advocate, the Center for Peoples with Disabilities? Huh, nothing ever came of that. But you know what? I couldn't believe it. Not even the Schiavos. Nobody that I know of actually even talked about this. And Pat Anderson, the attorney for the Schiavos, said that they are the shark of all the agencies because they have federal funding and they're under federal law. And if they decide that there might be a need for an investigation, even court orders, everything comes to a complete standstill. But see, I don't think there was enough light shined on them. All right. When Jeff Bennett was on with us, I want to remind you, too, that Jeff is on at 8 p.m., the hour before Sweet Liberty, and he's on the, what is it? Well, you can go to thefederalobserver.com, and you can listen live at 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. Clay Douglas is on. Oh, excuse me. He's not on at 8 p.m. Shoot. I had it written down here. Let me find it. Oh, 10 a.m. Okay, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, folks. 10 a.m. Eastern Time. You can listen to Jeff, Jeff Bennett. At his website, you can listen live on the Internet at federalobserver.com. 8 p.m., I was thinking of Al Adask. I told you that I found out that Al Adask is on the hour before this broadcast on WFAR. And that's evidently what I had in my mind. When Jeff was on Monday night, we got into a conversation about the Council for National Policy. And one of the things I did, and I haven't called Clay yet, and I do intend to do this, I did get a call from Clay Douglas, and he offered me the 10 p.m. or 9 p.m. slot on that new network that they're setting up with the American Free Press, and also Linda Kennedy, who was taken off the air by WFAR. But I would be compromising my own values by doing that. And one of the things that I find so telling is that the American Free Press, they'll write about the Bilderbergers, the Illuminati, and all of this stuff. I guess it doesn't make any difference, but they seemingly will not talk about the Council for National Policy. And I don't know, I know that several years ago, Kelly and I, Nelson and I, did a 10-hour expose. In fact, I've thought about this, and I just haven't done it. Is send those tapes to Darren and let him put them up on our website. But here's a short article. This was written by Charles Kendall, Jr., Ph.D. This is titled, Why the Council for National Policy. And this is in our Wolves in Sheep's Clothing section at the sweetliberty.org website. And for those of you who aren't aware, you see, there are so many members of the CNP that so many good people have been sucked into, have been hooked into. And as a matter of fact, when I had Austin Miles on with us, Reverend Austin Miles from California, he, in one of our best broadcasts we did, half of the doggone tape didn't take, half of it's missing, but we have some wonderful conversations with Reverend Austin Miles, too, that I should send to Darren, because he was invited to become a member of the Council for National Policy. Knowing nothing about it, I learned about it from Betty Mills, my precious friend and my mentor. And so I knew about it, but he didn't know anything except that all of these famous people were members of the Council for National Policy. Think of the name of it. What do you think they do? So anyway, he became a member. And here's what he told us on the air. He had gone to a couple of meetings, and he said, I told my wife after that second meeting, these people all purport to be fighting to stop the New World Order. And he said, I believe that we're going to see some of them sitting right up on the board. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Storm. I'm calling from New York.
Yes, Storm.
Yes, something very important. I'll be very quick. You mentioned the American Free Press.
Well, you know what? You interrupted. Well, that's all right. Go ahead, honey. Yes, I mentioned the American Free Press.
So, because the reason why it's very important is that, because I can't hear when I listen to the radio, the delay is so long.
You're right. You're right, honey. Excuse me. Yes, you're right.
I'm calling you again.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You go ahead.
All right. No, the reason why I just want to warn you, I'll make this very quick. I don't want to go on and on, but I just want to warn everybody out there. The American Free Press used to belong to the Liberty Lobby. Liberty Lobby was owned by a guy named Willis Carto.
Yes.
Willis Carto got his funding from the Edison family. And the Liberty Lobby and Willis Carto was connected, believe it or not, regardless of what they say with the Institute of Historical Review, they are connected to the ADL and the Still Group, which is a communist group that Tom Valentine, with his Radio Free America show, he belonged to the Communist Party, and he was part of this organization called the Still Group.
Let me, Storm, let me ask you a question, darling. Do you know this as a fact?
Well, Tom Valentine, I'll tell you. I got from Mr. Cooper.
Hey,
Cooper.
Okay, cool. You know what I want you to do?
What?
Stay with us here. We have to take a 60-second break.
Okay.
Will you stay with us?
Yes, I will.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. And I hope that you'll get your pen in your hand, reminding you that this broadcast is sponsored by you, our listeners. We'll be right back.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
All right, folks, we're back with you. Storm is calling in from New York, and he was giving us some information on the American Free Press. Storm, repeat what you said, because it wasn't that long, honey.
Okay.
The connection.
Right. All I just want to let the people know is that I don't want the people to be bamboozled to think that the Liberty Lobby is with this anti-New World Order. They are not. Willis Carto, who ran the Liberty Lobby, okay, connected to another group called the Institute of Historic Review. They put this thing out like they were opposed to the New World Order, they opposed to Zionism, Israel, etc. They are not. These people belong and they are part of it, including the Spotlight newspaper that they put out. That's why you will see them give information about the Council of Foreign Relations and the UN.
Oh, the Bilderberger.
The reason why they
yeah.
do that, and William Cooper stated this, and he's right, and I checked it out. The reason why they will do this is that they want to, originally what the plan was to compile a huge mailing list of names of people who subscribe to the Spotlight, who belong to Liberty Lobby, as a lobby, etc., so they could know who the so-called political dissidents are against the New World Order. That was one of the purposes. The other thing is that they are also linked to the ADL. When the ADL burned down a warehouse of books from the Institute of Historic Review, then all of a sudden, they're against the ADL and Brene Brown and the Zionist stuff, which is a bunch of bullcrap, they're not. Willis Carto received some funds from the Edison family, who's linked to the Fords and the Rockefellers, etc., to rebuild, whatever damage that the ADL did.
Uh-huh.
But they are linked together. It is a front group, in other words. Their purpose is to compile lists of people's names of who most likely, most vehemently would oppose the New World Order. The term they use is political dissidents. And Tom Valentine, who belonged to a group called the Still Group, and I'm not too certain about everything at that organization. It probably doesn't exist now. I'm talking about Tom Valentine, who owns Carol Tech and down in Naples, Florida. He also belongs to the Communist Party. He is a Freemason. I can't, if you knew, I knew a certain symbol. I know how to do it, that if I met him, I could do it, just what one of Cooper's tashy intelligence people did. But it is a fraud, and the fact that this organization is opposed to the ADL and all the Zionist stuff is a bunch of crap. Yes, they do have the Holocaust revision stuff and what that stuff is with the Institute of Historic Review, but it is really a front group. And Valentine and Willis Carto and the American Free Press, which is used to be the Spotlight newspaper, portraying themselves as an anti-Zionist, anti-New World Order, populist type of paper, it is a lie. They really are a part of it. Now, they have people there like who are guest writers, or some people who are not, though, like the guy in the wheelchair. I can't think of his name.
That's all right. You know what?
Right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Storm. Thank
all
you.
Right, I just want to let people know that.
Thank you very much.
I'm not saying Douglas is a part of this either. No. No. That's what I'm saying.
No.
People see the American Free Press, they don't know. But if the American Free Press, if we're talking about the same American Free Press that Tom Valentine had a special show last year, that was the former Spotlight. I'm talking about that one. I don't know about any others, but that one. It is a fraud, and they are linked to the ADL, And Cardell is connected with the Edison family, which is also linked to these other families, and they are linked to also another organization is linked to the ADL too. Them also, the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Oh yeah.
And fairness, accuracy, and reporting.
Yeah.
An organization called something in Costa Rica that's linked to FAIR and linked to Morris D's, but I can't think of their name. I just want to let people know that.
Thank you.
Okay,
sir.
I won't go on and on. Okay, but nice talking to you.
Thanks, honey. Thanks very much. Something that he said that sparked. I read an item today, folks, and I don't know if this is authentic. I probably shouldn't even be saying it, but it was written and presented very professionally that Israel is looking as talking about and evidently no, I shouldn't say evidently. According to this article, talking with people here in the U.S. about building prisons. And one was Missouri, one place, and I don't remember where the other was, but they said that they would be modular buildings and they could have them up in a year. Israel and the political dissidents, see, would wind up in these camps. Chertoff, the new czar of Homeland Security, is a dual citizen. He is an Israeli citizen, folks. And I wanted to say this about the spotlight. This is when I made the connection. I knew the spotlight wasn't totally accurate. When I first started reading the spotlight, I wasn't actually doing this broadcast about this tonight, but there is a connection. And what I was about to say, and I got myself all off on this, I haven't called Clay back. But I had a conversation with Linda Kennedy, and as we were talking, I thought to myself, why would I even consider this? Because it would be a total compromise to my values. And when I mentioned to Clay, why will they not expose the Council for National Policy? He said, I don't know, but you can use your airtime and expose them all you want. He said, you just have to choose your battles. And it sounded tempting, yet I'm not going to do it. And I'm not going to do it for that reason, because on the Sweet Liberty broadcast, there would be advertisements for the American Free Press. And I believe I mentioned this to you, maybe it was even Monday when Jeff was on, that I did get a call from Willis Carto a couple of years ago when we began talking about Germany and National Socialism and the lies. The biggest lies, I think, that we've ever been told revolve around, well, besides religion, revolve around the Second World War. And Willis Carto offered to advertise the Sweet Liberty broadcast in the American Free Press. And I, you know, of course, the thought went through my mind. I thought, geez, they've got about 100,000, at least the spotlight used to claim 100,000 readers. And then for that, I would have to endorse the American Free Press. And I told him I would give it some thought and get back with him, and it was rude of me. I didn't bother to call Willis Carto back, but, I mean, as tempting as it sounded to be able to gain new listeners to this broadcast, I couldn't do it. I would not be able, in good conscience, to endorse the American Free Press. And so I'm, for the time at least, I'm staying where I'm at. When I started subscribing to the Spotlight newspaper, I was very, very naive. Very naive. And I was shocked at what I was reading. I remember the one big headline, Carter's Cocaine Connection, and it was all about the President Carter at that time. And his cocaine connection with the Bush family and the money laundering and all that. And I sat there reading it, and I thought, this can't be true. It's our president. And then my logic and reason began to come in, and I thought, well, but if it wasn't true, they would be sued. They wouldn't be able to say this. Well, then they are saying it. Well, how come their building isn't getting blown up or something? And then I sat there, and then I thought, well, let's see. At that time, I think the census said there were about 250 million or 40 million some people in America. And I thought, well, Heck, 100,000 people are a drop in the bucket. So they don't care who reads this kind of stuff. And so I subscribed and read it, and not too long after I started subscribing, I began getting the mail, the junk mail. I can't even tell you how many organizations that I sent money to, because I was beginning to wake up, and I felt very, very concerned for our country, and I didn't know what to do. I never even voted, folks. I guess something within me, innately, because I had an uncle who was a state senator in Michigan for 26 years, and when he found out I didn't vote, he just about had conniptions. It's your duty. It's your responsibility. And I said, well, how do you know which butthead to vote for, Uncle Gar? It just didn't make sense. But anyway, I started getting all this mail, and it was wonderful. These letters, I tell you what, if you go to sweetliberty.org, and if you will read the lead article, Who Silenced the Outcry, you will really get a handle on what their methods are and what their M.O. is. Because what they do is they tell you all these terrible things that are going on, like the Heritage Foundation. Oh, and they have hotline right to the Congress. And it's so important what they're doing, you see, because the Congress gets all these bills and they can't read them all, and all these terrible things are stuck inside the bills, and they're the watchdog. And I pledged $100 a month to the Heritage Foundation. And every time I wrote the check, I said, Father, thank you that I can do this for my country. And I meant it from the bottom of my heart. And every time I wrote checks, I couldn't open my mail without getting out my checkbook. And I felt so relieved, so inspired to think that at least, if even though I don't know what to do, there are all these wonderful people out here that are doing it. And so I sent, over a period of years, I sent thousands of dollars. I owned my business then, and I had the funds to do it. And I was convinced, of course, by the mail that Jesse Helms was the only. Jesse Helms and, what's her name, by the way, Phyllis Schlafly, they're joined at the hip. Well, they have that. I mean, that was the hero. And so he was my hero from North Carolina. I lived in Illinois, and I'd send a couple $100. And one time, I get this thing in the mail, and, oh, my gosh, they're trying to get him out, and he's the only senator, U.S. senator, in Washington, D.C., looking out for us. I sent $500 to Jesse Helms' campaign from Illinois. And then, what do you think? I got an invitation to a meeting, to a luncheon in Washington, D.C. But, folks, this is how people get sucked in. This is why I can so relate, and I so understand how it happens, because I've been there, done that. And if you will go, as I said, to sweetliberty.org, go in the Wolves in Sheep's Clothing section and read the article titled, it's an introduction article to that section, Who Silenced the Outcry? And you'll see it's all these yahoos. And the Council for National Policy is a biggie. But that's when I began reading, getting all the mail was after I subscribe to the Spotlight newspaper. And if you're a subscriber to the American Free Press, why don't you ask them why they won't expose the Council for National Policy? And I got way off what I was going to do tonight, but I want to share with you, I printed this whole thing out. Now I have to find the page I'm looking for. I think Lily said it's the third from the last page. What I'll do is I'll post this in our website, this whole article. There's five, okay. Oh, here we are. Listen to this. This is what I'll... Let me finish telling you what Reverend Austin Miles said when he told his wife that he believed that some of these people in the Council for National Policy were going to wind up on the board or in the government of the New World Order, the One World Government. Reverend Austin Miles, by the way, was attacked by Morton Blackwell, I believe it was. When I say attacked, I don't mean physically. And he was accused of, he was trying to help a child who had been taken from his mother. The child had, the Children Family Services in California were insisting that the boy be on chemotherapy. He had cancer and he was dying. And the mother said, I want to try alternative medicine. And they came and took the boy from her. And Reverend Austin Miles was trying to help the mother. And they did help the mother get the boy back. But he wound up with a lot of legal stuff going on account of that. But I asked him what he thought about Phyllis Schlafly. He said that he didn't know her well. He had only gone to a couple meetings. But he said, I know she's not sincere because of the remarks she made at one of the meetings. She made the statement that the right to life was the only issue that they had to hang their hat on. It was their only hook. He said she used that exact word. The right to life is the only issue we have to hang our hat on. It's our only hook. But you see, in the CNP, they have the Gun Owners of America, so those they have somebody for anybody's hot button, folks. Okay? But anyway, I'm going to just, because we're running out of time, how the conservative media covers the CMP. Members of the conservative media, this is an article, I don't even know who wrote it, it's in truthout.org. Members of the conservative media, many of whom have CMP ties, have on occasion reported on CMP meetings, and suggested a CNP hand in shaping administration policy. Oh, by the way, while you're in there in the wolves and sheep's clothing section, look at Betty Mills' piece that she did in the 80s, Open Letter to Eagle Forum. Read it and see how much of a role they play in administration of this government. Council for National Policy. In May 2001, World Magazine, which is edited by Olasky, reported on its website that CMP, a, quote, confidential network of several hundred highly influential conservative business leaders, received, quote, lavish attention from the White House at its 20th anniversary conference. World reported that CMP's Elite Gold Circle Club met May 3rd at the White House with Chief Strategist Karl Rove and President Bush. That Attorney General John Ashcroft spoke at a private Gold Circle dinner, and that Supreme Court Justice Scalia spoke to the entire group. Records of White House staff, whose sole function is to advise and assist the President, are not subject to Freedom of Information Act requests. But a speech given to an organization that essentially receives public funding is not a government record. It is a document that the public is entitled to see and would see if the IRS were doing its job. Similarly, records of federal courts are not subject to FOIA, but all the Supreme Court justices except Scalia and Thomas have pointed their speeches on the Supreme Court website. In response to a FOIA request, the Department of Justice said that a written speech was not prepared for the Attorney General to deliver to the Gold Circle Club dinner in May 2001 because the counsel had asked the AG to participate in dinner conversation only. Okay, around the same time, ABC published its piece on the CMP meeting in May 2002. The conservative press filled in some additional details. At that CNP meeting, which took place 10 months before the U.S. invaded Iraq, a writer for the ultra-conservative Newsmax participated on a CNP panel about the war on terrorism. Newsmax president and editor is Christopher Ruddy, who formerly wrote for Rupert Murdoch's New York Post and Richard Scaife's Pittsburgh Tribune Review. He's the author of the conspiracy mongering The Strange Death of Vincent Foster. The writer, Dr. Alexander Nemitz, reported that among the 500, quote, prominent attendees Several high-ranking officials in the Bush administration made speeches and participated in panel discussions. He reported a complete uniformity of judgment at a meeting attended by Bush administration officials when the Bush administration would still pretend for several months to try diplomacy that Saddam needed to be deposed with military force. According to Nemitz, everyone at the meeting agreed that, listen, Saddam's regime should be toppled as soon as possible. This is coming from a Council on National Policy meeting, folks. Saddam's regime should be toppled as soon as possible. America should not wait for the fall of Saddam's regime, which is organized exactly along the lines of the National Socialist Party that ruled Germany in 33 to 45. I've said several times, I'll say it again, I believe that the comparison that they make between Saddam Hussein and Adolf Hitler is probably appropriate. Because if you read the book, Saddam Hussein, that is on our website, sweetliberty.org, in the Iraq section, I think you'll be convinced that there was a great reason to compare them. Because Saddam Hussein was making all-out efforts to bring the people in Iraq out of the Dark Ages, building schools, universities, encouraging women to get into involved in government if they so wished. And the people in Iraq were almost all of them nearly, or a great majority of them, were illiterate. Now, a tyrannical ruler would not want the people that he rules over being able to read, would he? Wouldn't you be better off if they couldn't read? And one of the terrible things he did, if a parent didn't allow the children to go to school, the government shut off their gas. And I just thought, oh, that's a really terrible thing. Not, I'm being facetious. Adolf Hitler brought the German people up, not off their knees, but off their faces, folks. And within a year after he was Chancellor of Germany, the German people were thriving. And all through the 30s, while the U.S. of A. and countries all over the world were just suffering under terrible depression, Germany was thriving. That's why they have to demonize Adolf Hitler and Germany. And it's why they had to. Saddam Hussein was making an effort to put together a pan-Arab group of countries to keep the money, the Middle Eastern money, there and keep it out of the hands of the Western bankers. Now, why do you think they wanted to bring him down? Why do you think they wanted to bring him down? So anyway, where in the heck was I now? Saddam's regime should be toppled as soon as possible. America should not wait for the fall of his regime, which is organized exactly along the lines of the National Socialist Party that ruled Germany in 33 to 45. Saddam's regime, just like Hitler's, won't implode due to internal problems. At the same time, America, in its strikes against Iraq, will not be the aggressor, but the leader and the united force of all the opposition groups inside Iraq, the Kurds, Shia minority, etc. This will greatly facilitate the military operations against Saddam. Nemitz further reported that the attendees had ruled out military action against the other members of the Axis of Evil, Iran and North Korea. 1 year later, about 2 weeks after Saddam fell, both Vice President Dick Cheney and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld spoke at the CNP meeting in Washington. The attendance of the Vice President and Secretary of Defense during a war was not reported at all by the American media, but was reported by several papers in Alberta because the Albertan Economic Development Minister, Mark Norris, attended the meeting. Norris, through a spokesman, claimed that a copy of Norris' remarks at the meeting was not available. The purpose of Norris' trip, as reported in the Calgary Herald, was to, quote, meet with a secretive and influential right-wing think tank in a bid to mend fences over Canada's refusal to join the war in Iraq and to help Alberta companies win rebuilding contracts. This is all around the Council for National Policy. Oliver North is a member of the Council for National Policy. But according to a Ministry of Economic Development press release, Norris was there also to promote Alberta's oil production from its, I guess that's how. Somehow, however, CMP's longstanding secrecy policy managed to slip by a Defense Department Freedom of Information official, and the Pentagon released Rumsfeld's speech under the Freedom of Information Act. The speech was a thank you for CMP's Thomas Jefferson Award for servant leadership. Rumsfeld was introduced by Hodel, who at the time was CMP's president. Rumsfeld gave a brief speech in which he likened the war in Iraq to the American Revolution. That's all I'm going to do here, folks, because we're almost out of time anyway. The CNP, I've got a membership list here from 93, and Morton C. Blackwell. By the way, Morton Blackwell, Paul Weyrich, there was a group of them. They called themselves the New Right, We're Ready to Lead. Jerry Falwell, that group. On a documentary or a broadcast that was done by the Blackwell group, basically what they said was that they had trouble gaining control of the conservative movement until they began speaking on religious issues. Huh? You think they don't use religion to control the people? We're out of time here, and it is the end of our week. Our broadcast week. So I hope you have a delightful next 4 days. And keep me in your prayers, folks, please. Thank you. And we'll see you back on Monday. Remember, Sweet Liberty is brought to you by you. Good night, and God bless you.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to firstamendmentradio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Be sure to listen to the